Joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Sue Schleifer, who is here to talk about her newly published book, The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust, and a book release party that will take place this Sunday, where you can hear more about the book, and she'll have copies of the book there that you can get signed. Now, Sue, you're a writer. You've been writing for a long time, but you've done many things in your life, and currently you are also a life coach. Yes. Here in Lafayette, and actually globally, everything is global now. You coach people by telecommunications and computer. And this book was so marvelous. I loved one, I guess one way to describe it and your approach to it. In the very back, you're thanking a lot of people for their help with the book. And you thank your clients who you work with as a life coach. And you thank them for keeping you engaged and curious. And I think anyone who knows you or anyone who will read this book will think how appropriate that is to describe you and to describe your writing. Very engaged and very curious. And one gets the feeling reading the book and also in any contact with you how much everything matters, everything in the world and everything that you address in this book. I'd like you to tell people, and I know many of our listeners have heard the story of why you're here in Louisiana. You're originally from California. So before we get into the book, the structure of the book, just tell us how you ended up in Louisiana.
Okay, well, thank you.
Part of your many journeys.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction, Judith. Yes, well, we moved to Louisiana, we being my husband and I and our cat, 3 years ago. Mark DeWitt is the Dr. Tommy Como Endowed Chair in Traditional Music at the university. And he was hired to start a program in traditional music, and that's why we ended up here.
And you joined him. You took this journey here, and so much has happened since you moved here. You have published this book, and I know that that was a goal of yours for a long time, in addition to your work as a life coach, and in addition to your engagement with this new world that the two of you have come into. And your enthusiasm about everything that you encounter here has been reflected in meetings, conversations with people, and also you have a wonderful blog that goes along with your life coaching, and it expresses so much of your enthusiasm about this area. So I feel like that's a part of your work as well, and what you do is just your response to this new world that you've come into. This book, The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust. Zen means so many things to people. I have a little Zen calendar on my desk, and the word Zen gets thrown around so often. Many people will say, oh, that's just so Zen. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think many of us don't really know what we're saying. Many of us know it very cursorily, but may not know much about what that means when you see it in a title of a book like this. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm going to ask you about those two parts of your life that have come together in this book so beautifully in this wonderful structure. Tell us how you first became involved with Zen.
Well, as I describe in the book, it was actually, well, I say in the book it was actually Mark that introduced me to Zen, but that's not exactly 100% true. He introduced me to a particular Zen center in California, in the Bay Area. However, I had had an interest in really world religion since I was a young person. In fact, when we moved here, I found an old paper that I wrote in high school about world religion. So that was kind of fun to read. But so I've had an interest in that. And in terms of Zen, I see Zen, and you're going to read all kinds of different definitions and interpretations of it, but as basically mindfulness, paying attention in the moment, and being aware of one's thoughts, aware of one's body, aware of one's feelings. And through meditation or mindfulness, you train yourself to be more aware. And so it's a practice. So some people practice an instrument, you know, the violin or the cello or piano. Some people practice sports. And in doing these activities, you are focusing. You're focusing your whole attention. And that's really what Zen is in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you've been interested in world religions, Zen, for a long time, but you became involved in a very particular way in Berkeley, California. Describe the place that you first became involved with.
It's called the Empty Gate Zen Center. It's a Zen center that's part of the Quantum School of Zen. There's many, many schools of Zen around the world. This particular one was started by a man from South Korea, and he came to the United States and started Zen centers around the United States as well as around the world. And I was introduced to it through Mark. He had become involved with the Quantum School of Zen when he lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and was a student at the university there and got involved. And there happened to be the same School of Zen in Berkeley. It's a small little building on a residential street in Berkeley. It's nothing special. It's really more that what goes on inside, and it's about training one's mind and body and being present with a group of people and learning from one another. And it became a very important place in my life during a particularly difficult time when my mom was facing Alzheimer's disease. And I talk about that in the book. And so it really helped me through that journey, that particular journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I find so interesting about the book, when you describe this Zen center, it's a very small place. It's a very enclosed place. And as you start to describe it, it feels like it becomes even more intimate because you describe the room where you do sitting meditation, where there are retreats. So it's very contained, very intimate, very small. And then you write about traveling the whole wide world over. So, and again, just a reminder for those people tuning in, I'm speaking with Sue Schleifer, whose book, The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust, has just been published. So that's one part of your life that was very, very important to you. But travel, physical, external travel to many parts in the world is also very important. And before we start talking about how you merge these two, when did you start loving to travel?
I would say it was really after I finished college. My family did not travel much, unfortunately, but it didn't stop me later. So my very first trip was with my boyfriend after we both graduated with our bachelor's degrees. And we did what was popular at that time was like an eight or nine week trip around Europe. And it was really a lot of fun. And we went a lot of places. And then I had the good fortune some years later to begin working with a travel company, an active travel company, Backroads. And they put on bicycling and hiking and multi-sport vacations all over the world. And I worked for them for 9 years in kind of two different stints. And I had the good fortune of traveling quite a lot of places. And I must admit, traveling in style, which I don't always do anymore, but certainly had the opportunity to do with them.
Right, and because some of these tours that you arranged were walking tours, some were on bicycle, but you had to go ahead and research some of these places. So you got to stay in a lot of hotels and inns and places where your guests would stay.
Yes, yes. So I did some of the research of some of the new destinations, and I would part of my job was to find the appropriate places for the guests to stay. And so I would, you know, try different places and, you know, do a lot of research before I went. And I was staying in these gorgeous chateaus in France and beautiful lodges in South Africa and in Patagonia. And many of these places, many of the destinations I do write about in the book, not so much the accommodations, but about the travel and the experiences. And I had a lot of adventures.
some of these places a very far cry from that small room in the Zen Center in Berkeley. Very different experience. Now, just name some of those places where you went. I loved some of the descriptions of they were so exotic, some of the places that you created these tours.
Yeah. We created a tour in South Africa, both in the Cape Town and wine region and over on the east in the near Kruger National Park at a the animal parks in Patagonia, the very tip of South Africa, and Chile and Argentina. I went to France a few times. Japan, created a tour in the Noto Peninsula in Japan. So those are a few,
many others. Yeah. Well, give us a sense of the timing of that. Were you doing these travels before you became involved in the Empty Gate Zen Center?
Most of them were beforehand, and I had some interest in these topics as we talked about, but I wasn't practicing on a regular basis at that point.
Mm-hmm. So the tours, the exotic travels, occurred before you became very intimately involved in the Empty Gate Zen Center. But you take these two parts of your life and you merge them in the most interesting way in this book. When did you start thinking about doing that, taking those two parts of your life and or maybe just when did you start thinking about the parallels between the two?
Well, it came to me when I was sitting an 8-day silent Zen meditation retreat at Empty Gate Zen Center. I had often thought about, I should write about these travel experiences that I've had, but I hadn't thought about it in the way in which it came out in this book. So sitting an 8-day retreat, silent, one has a lot of time to think. And at some point during the retreat, and I talk about it in the book, this idea, this parallel of sitting a Zen retreat and travel came to me, and I started playing with it in my thinking and making a few notes during the retreat. And it was about a month after I completed that retreat when I began writing the book. And it was 4 years in the making. I wasn't writing consistently during that 4 years. A lot was going on, including our move to Louisiana. And my father passed away during that time. And a lot of things happened. And but I kept coming back to the book, and it evolved as well. It was not the same book that I conceived of sitting in the meditation retreat as it ended up being, as is often the case with the creative process.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a very interesting process as well, just as you described settling into the 8-day retreat, sitting retreat. I found myself settling into the book too. It's a very interesting structure that you have going between the travel and the Zen retreat. And at first, I was a little resistant, I think, but you were so skillful in, I guess, planning this tour, this trip, that I eventually settled into it, and it became this lovely rhythmic call and response between your time in the Dharma room and your time all over the world, whether it was Nepal or Bali or South Africa, and then coming back to that experience. But you so carefully led that, and perhaps your experience in leading tours helped you. It was an interesting experience in trust, giving yourself over to an unusual structure in a book and allowing you to take the reader from a very small intimate space to a very large space. It was an interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
How did you think about that structure? What inspired you?
Well, you know, I went back and forth on it. And basically, I mean, it's about inner and outer journeys. And I think we all have those, whether we travel to exotic places or not. I mean, every day we're experiencing our lives in the world and with other people, and then we're experiencing our internal world. And so this was just a more explicit way of doing that. And, you know, some people think that, you know, one does not need to travel around the world to have some of the kinds of experiences that I describe. It's just, I think when we put ourselves in new situations, whether it be maybe going on a fishing trip, you know, down on the Gulf Coast, which might be new for someone, or, you know, going to the university for the first time, or whatever that new experience might be, our senses are opened and enlivened. And when we do those sorts of things, we learn so much about ourselves, just as we do when we sit in meditation and sit and be quiet. Because so often we don't spend much time in quietness, you know, and I think that there's a lot that can be discovered when we do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we continue talking about those two types of journeys, I'd like you to read a couple short passages from the book, one having to do more with your experience in Zen and the other with travel. Very short, but give people a sense of your writing in this book.
What is it about travel that makes it easier to be spontaneous, to follow our hunches and take risks? In my daily life, with all the responsibilities and schedules, it is harder for me to go off on an unintended path. While on vacation, my days are more leisurely. My eyes are wide open for the newness of it all, and I am eager to learn and take it in. Which is just what we were talking mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. And then here's a short passage from much later in the book. We make our own choices about which doors we enter. Do I only enter doors where I am welcomed with open arms, or do I sometimes enter places that require more effort on my part? The Chinese proverb says, "Teachers open the door, you must enter by yourself." Not only must I enter, but I must decide whether to stay. Then I must continue to show up and participate and keep showing up even when it gets hard.
Beautifully written and very evocative of what you're pondering over in this book about travels and openness, whether it's in journeying far away or journeying in the Dharma Center. Well, let's talk just a bit. I'm sure some people are very curious about that journey at the Dharma Center. Describe what that, I mean, I know you describe it in the book, but give people a sense of what you're talking about, because you intersperse your travels around the world with this particularly this 8-day retreat that you were doing. So kind of give us a sense of what what you did.
Mm-hmm. At this particular Zen center, and of course it's different at different places, and you know, people go on retreat, all kinds of retreats. So this is, I'm describing one particular kind of retreat, and it could just as easily be a retreat to of prayer, you know, at a Catholic center. But in this particular center, the day starts very early at 6 in the morning. And we started with what's called morning bows. And it's a particular kind of bow. And it's very good exercise, actually. And then we would do chanting. And there's some particular chants. And both bows and chanting are a particular way of waking up and paying attention in a very specific way. And it's a way to watch one's mind. What am I thinking about as I'm bowing, as I'm chanting? Am I just doing it and not critiquing it? Or am I saying, oh, I wish I could do these bows better, or I don't like these chants? Or, you know, what dialogue do I have going on in my head? So it's a way of paying attention to that and learning about oneself. And then we would have a very formal breakfast, where we would eat in a particular way. And then we had several sessions of meditation, and we would sit for 30 minutes, and then we would do 10 minutes of walking meditation, 30 minutes of sitting. And so there's quite a few of those during the day, three of the formal meals, and then chanting again at the end of the evening. And it would go until 9:30 p.m. So it's a very long day. Mm-hmm. We would have a couple breaks, and also a work period each day where we would help with cleaning the center or doing yard work or cleaning the kitchen, that sort of mm-hmm. thing.
Well, one thing that I just found lovely in your description, and again, you're interspersing your tales of travel to other countries with each day of this retreat, sometimes going back and forth between days, but talking about various experiences you had at this retreat. And it was like a curtain was being pulled back, because I think we've all seen images of what you're talking about, whether it is a Catholic retreat or a Zen retreat or, you know, people sitting quietly, but we have no idea what they're thinking. And with this book, it's like you just sort of pulled that curtain and you revealed so many of the thoughts that you did have. And in fact, I did have to laugh. Some of your sentences were thinking, thinking, thinking. There was a busyness to it as well initially. Mm-hmm. And your musings and ponderings about this journey, this what to the world seems like something very quiet and as though nothing is happening, is really quite an intense journey for you, just as intense as if you were planning that bicycle trip in France.
It's true. And of course, everybody's experience is different. And the next time I do an eight-day retreat, it'll be different again. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a little picture of my experience. And I think a lot of people think that, you know, meditation, you have to quiet your mind. And if you're thinking, that's a problem. And what I've learned in sitting and with the teachers that I've had is that thinking is just what happens, you know, and you just pay attention. You know, what am I thinking? And gradually what can happen sometimes is that my mind would relax and there would be less of that thinking, and then sit down the next, you know, period and there it would be again. Mm-hmm. So it really varies. And I just pay attention what's going on and mm-hmm. just notice.
Now, there seems to be a parallel when you're reading your stories of travel to other countries to that as well, that learning to pay attention. But there was also that large element of trust, and that's in the title of your book. Again, my guest, writer Sue Schleifer, her newly published book is The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust. So in addition to just being aware and awake and mindful on your travels, physical travels in the world, where does that element of trust come in, that parallel element of trust?
Well, when I would sit down and meditate or practice mindfulness, I have to trust that this is where I'm meant to be right now, right here, and be in the moment and not worry about whether it's going to do anything for me or not, and just go with it. Just be there. Mm-hmm. And ask myself questions. What is this? What am I? Those are some of the big questions that we were trained to ask ourselves. And the mantra that we would use is, I'm having a blank, that we would say, don't know. What mm-hmm. am I? Don't know. And that's a very complex.
To accept that, to be okay
yes,
with that.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. That I don't have to have an answer. Mm-hmm. That I am comfortable in this openness and this trusting that is okay to not know.
And what were the parallels that you found with those thoughts in your travel stories, your traveling around the world stories?
Well, often we go somewhere, especially where we don't speak the language, and we have no idea what's going on. I mean, we might have ideas about it, but really, do we really know what's going on?
You have some very amusing stories about stories you would make up about people you would observe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, I mean, we've all done this, I think, when we're on an airplane, for example, and we're sitting next to people and we're not necessarily talking to them, but we notice things. We notice maybe what they're reading or what movie they're watching, and we might make up stories, you know, about them, and we don't really know what's going on for them. The person might be clutching the handle, you know, the armrest during the takeoff, and we wonder what's going on for them. Or just even in, like, I describe several chapters about Bali, and they have so many rituals. And I've read about the rituals, and, you know, I've even talked to some people, and I never really felt like I knew what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And just have to trust that it doesn't matter. You know, I'll experience it in whatever way I can. And
rather than imposing some made up story or imposing a dislike upon the situation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so often when we travel, you know, we all have our likes and dislikes. I talk about that quite a bit in the book. And I found that I would have the most rich experiences when I just trusted just what was happening and was just in really paying attention to what was going on in the moment and my own experiences of it, and, you know, paid attention to my body. What am I feeling right now? Mm-hmm. And open my eyes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the same thing that I do with my clients, my coaching clients, is I try to be there, right there in the moment with them and encourage them to do the same thing. And that's when we really, you know, we do wake up. We wake up for our lives and we discover what's important to us and what gives our lives meaning. Mm-hmm. And that's really quite powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very powerful the way you express those in both elements of your story, the actual physical travels and also that the intense experience in the Dharma, in the Zen center. You know, we assume that people who travel are open to the world. And I think that was one thing that was very interesting about your depiction of your travels. Obviously, someone who loves to travel, you sought travel out. But there's an element in what you're saying that many of us who do travel aren't necessarily open to the world. Just because we're seeing new things doesn't necessarily mean that we're taking them in.
That's true. I mean, it can be true. And I know that, you know, there were some, I described some situations where I wasn't necessarily open to it. There was a particular situation where I was in Nepal and we were traveling to the Chitwan Jungle Lodge, and we were picked up in a car, my friend and I, and they picked up a couple. And I had this very intense reaction to one of the people in the car, and I allowed myself to get extremely annoyed by her. And, you know, how often do we do that in our lives, right? We get annoyed by something or someone, and I mean, that's going to happen. And so just pay attention. So what's going on for me? What button is being pushed here, and what can I learn about myself?
Well, in parallel to that, so many of your stories about the retreat, the Zen retreat, have moments like that as well. Intense annoyment at something that's all happening very quietly.
Yes.
But a reaction to something very small.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eating was a big thing for me at that retreat. I got really annoyed by some of the eating practices. And so I had to really look at that, hold up a mirror and go, well, when else do I get annoyed in my life? Mm-hmm. You know, what's mm-hmm. going on here? And what can I learn? What parallels can I learn about from this practice of eating meditation to other areas in my life when I might be judgmental or get annoyed with myself or with someone else? Mm-hmm. What can I learn here?
That seems to be the constant through this book. What can I learn here?
Yeah.
And if you are just tuning in, my guest is writer Sue Schleifer. Her book, The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust, has just been published. And she has a book release party this Sunday. Everyone's invited to
yes.
the party. It's going to be at the Camellia House. Mm-hmm. Where is that?
That's at 708 Jefferson. So if you head through downtown heading north, on Jefferson. It's a beautiful old home, Camellia House, where lots of interesting things go on. Wise body, Pilates, there's acupuncture and massage and all kinds of things that go on in that house. And Sunday, June 2nd, from 3 to 5 p.m., I'll be having this book release party.
And you're going to be reading passages from the book?
Yeah, around 4, mm-hmm. I'll read a few passages and we'll have books there available for people.
Right. And I'm sure you'll be happy to chat with people about your experiences either in the Zen Center or your travels around the world.
Yes.
And I believe you're about to embark upon another travel. Aren't you heading off to one of your favorite places this summer?
I am. I mean, it's just interesting how things work. I'm going to Bali this summer. Back to Bali. I was there in the 80s when I worked for Backroads, and I haven't been back since. So it'll be many years later to go back there and see what it's like. And I'm going to be studying Balinese dance.
Which is another very important part of your life, which you touch on in the book periodically. And mm-hmm. that has a profound effect. In addition to Balinese dance. What is it about Bali that made it one of your very favorite places?
Oh, it's, I mean, physically, it's so beautiful. The land is so beautiful, all the rice, green rice terraces. And the people are so beautiful, both outwardly and inwardly. It's a very spiritual place. It's a Hindu culture. And they really embody their spiritualness in their lives, in their daily lives. It's different from any other place I've been to in the world. And the arts are so alive in Bali. The music, the gamelan music, the dance, the wood sculpture, the batiks, ikat fabrics. I mean, it's just everything about it is just quite amazing.
Well, I think people can see already that you're going to be incredibly open to this experience and mindful every day you're there in Bali this summer. Again, my guest, Sue Schleifer, her book, The Key to the Castle, Zen and Travel Stories of Trust. You can hear Sue read from the book this Sunday. It's from 3 until 5 at the Camellia House, and she'll have copies there that she'll sign. And again, be happy to chat with you about her experiences. Thank you so much, Sue.
Thank you, Judith. Appreciate it.